Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, EV discounts hit record levels, free overnight charging, and more Cybertruck demand questions being asked. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you why one EV truck charging project is not being put off by the forthcoming anti-EV administration in the US. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily, a trusted source of EV information. For Friday, 15th of November, I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. Patreon supporters get the shows ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. We'll start with news and a report coming in via Electra, saying that Tesla is now offering Cybertrucks for immediate delivery from inventory. Now, the inventory Tesla stock is one of the best little hidden secrets out there. They are effectively new vehicles, but just the same as every other car company, Tesla fans hate me saying that, that have cars sitting on dealer lots. Of course, Tesla haven't had to sell it to a dealer for a discount. It just sits in Tesla's inventory. It's made. It's in a car park. It's waiting to go. And you can have one right now. It's the latest piece of evidence that strongly suggests a falling demand for the vehicle, which was once said to have had 2 million reservations. The latest intelligence puts total Cybertruck sales somewhere between 35 and 50,000 units sold. The increased cost and reduced range of the eventual production model compared to initial promises will have no doubt influenced demand from some of those 2 million people. Tesla started fulfilling orders now without reservations in the US, implying the backlog is now fully clear. Deliveries also in Mexico and Canada. Unused production capacity is toxic to the automotive industry, and a planned production capacity of being able to make 250,000 units annually is clearly a long way off. Now, I still believe that price cuts are inevitable, and a $60,000 model is expected, I think, early next year, possibly even as soon as the first week in the quarter in early January. Could a federal tax credit be coming too? That's been a strangely missing from the Cybertruck. However, recent reports saying that a finance bill early in the new Republican administration are going to pull any levers possible to kill off the funding which helps consumers move into an EV. So maybe it's not even worth filling out the paperwork if that federal tax credit is going. I don't know. I see a lot of headlines saying it's bound to disappear. I don't know how quickly it can go, and whether that's a stroke of a pen or it goes through the, you know, votes and courts and things like that. I need to learn more about the American system. Well, let's talk about in October, EV incentives reached a new high as automakers like Honda and Chevrolet increased discounts to attract buyers in a very competitive market. According to Kelly Blue Book, the average transaction price for new EVs was $56,902 in October. The rise in incentives coincides with the introduction of new EV models like the Honda Prologue, which is selling really, really well, and the Chevy Equinox in the midsize sector. Last month in October, the average transaction price for mid-size SUVs, so the average transaction price of an EV, about $57,000, for a mid-size was $59,000. That's close to the industry average. With incentives, both the Prologue and the Equinox, of course, way under than both those averages. Well, Tesla saw its average transaction price fall last month in October. It was now down to $56,705, the drop you would think explained away by the Cybertruck's average transaction price dipping below $100,000 as those early Foundation Series 1s came off sale. The North American EV market is expanding, sales up 9% from October 23 to October 24, driven by models like the Equinox and the Prologue. Honda doing really good business with the Honda Prologue, by the way. GM's made over 120,000 units of those models at the Mexico plant this year, with the Equinox accounting for 50,000 of them. The U.S. Department of Treasury reports $2 billion in clean vehicle purchase savings for years so far in 2024. A string of articles in the last few days have all echoed a common theme, and I think it all started with perhaps one Reuters report, and then a lot of people kind of taking that headline and running with it, and that is to basically say, make the most of any financial help before the incoming administration, under the guidance of Tesla's CEO Elon Musk in some sort of consultancy role to the new presidency. He will fight against the tax credits, which so many people have relied upon until now. It would be nice if we were all billionaires, wouldn't it? Well, the Ford Pass iOS 18 update, announced back in June, has finally arrived, introducing new tools for iPhone users. Ford CEO Jim Farley indicating these will be available sometime in the fall. Are we in autumn still? Yes. Is it winter? Anyway, it's now live. The updates allow users to add lock and unlock commands to their control center for faster access without actually opening the FordPass app. Users can also place home screen widgets to quickly view key vehicle details, and the trailer check light feature has been reintroduced for those with a Ford hybrid or electric model. Preferred charge times can now be updated via the Energy tab. Let's talk Polestar. And Polestar 3 single motor rear wheel drive now on sale in the US. So if you want to pay $69,000, I think it is, EPA estimated range 350 miles. So if you just need the range, if you just want the range, then that's the one to go for. Now available to order. Deliveries anticipated early 2025. Previously only available in long range dual motor, you can now get the base long range rear wheel drive, $6,500 down from the least expensive all wheel drive version. If you just want the range, 107 kilowatt hour battery pack, 250 kilowatts DC fast charging, rear wheel drive, 350 miles of range, like I say, better than 315 for the all wheel drive and 279 for the performance model. Now let's talk electric truck charging and Green Lane, a collaboration between Daimler Truck of North America, BlackRock and NextEra Energy, is pushing forward to make a nationwide electric truck charging network, regardless of who is in the White House for the next 4 years, as it looks like they're set to attack the zero-emission vehicles as early as possible when they take over. Like I say, these reports coming out which say there's going to be some early lawmaking which gets done, or putting things through to the vote, which can, as much as possible, reduce any incentives. I'm not sure some of the money that's been assigned based on private investment, hundreds of billions of dollars going into the US battery industry, supply chains, EV manufacturing. I think you can't take that money away overnight, like I say, or the stroke of a pen. I don't think so anyway. But things like the $7,500 that everyday hardworking people have relied on to get into an EV, I gather that's going to be an easier nut to crack, to remove that and to start to attack electric vehicles. But we knew that was coming anyway, so we'll wait and see what the next 4 years brings us. But in terms of electric truck charging, Green Lane say they're setting up over 100 chargers for medium and heavy duty trucks along California's Interstate 15. Back in September, they got a $15 million grant to speed up the construction of a key charging station in Colton, California. Green Lane is collaborating with regional partners, OEMs and industry players to address challenges and ease the path to electrification. Both Daimler and Cummins also dedicated to emissions-free travel, and irrespective of the changes in regulations, those companies, they say, will move forward as planned with zero emission trucking, which is incredibly important for a couple of reasons. Firstly, those are often the most polluting vehicles in terms of the efficiency of those engines. They're often regulated differently in many places, different to passenger cars, and so just using them is a lot worse in terms of heavy-duty trucking. And also, these vehicles are working vehicles, so when the wheels aren't turning, you're not making money. So these are the vehicles that are, firstly, the most polluting, and then, secondly, that do the most miles. And so, millions of miles on an engine or a tractor is not unheard of. And like I say, if it's not working, it's not earning money. You only care about the bottom line. And so very important that those vehicles go electric as quick as possible, and also for the cost savings. So if you are doing routes and runs, which mean that you can either charge at beginning and end, or perhaps with a stop on the way, as we're seeing increasingly common here in Europe, mainland Europe as well, EV trucking is starting to become more popular. Yes, they're having to block, if I can do air quotes, you can't see what I'm doing, but if I can say block chargers, turning up at just a regular, Aral or Ionity station in, Germany or something, and having to maybe even unhook the trailer, possibly, or before you go pick up a new load, they're having to try and position their trucks to not block too many car spaces. So we're not flush at the minute with pull-through truck spaces. They will come, but that's increasingly popular over here. Yes, the distances in the US are bigger, just generally. It's a larger land mass with lots of distance between places. But if you are doing maybe a coastal route with things coming in via sea freight and you need to get that to depots, then moving those containers with electric power is entirely sensible and a lot cheaper. Right, we'll take a break. When we'll come back, we'll talk about US battery factories and why the Chinese are not ruling out investment in the US if all the chess pieces line up. Back in a mo. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Patreon supporters get the shows ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. Let's talk about Northvolt, the European battery manufacturer struggling financially, deciding to sell its US factory to Litton, a California startup specializing in lithium-sulfur batteries. As part of the deal, Litton will invest $50 million to purchase the equipment, take over the building lease, and upgrade the facility near San Francisco to match its operations in San Jose. Northvolt was once considered a potential competitor to the major Chinese players in the EV market, currently seeking over $900 million to address their financial challenges. On the other hand, Litton, backed by $425 million from investors, is boosting their US battery production competitiveness and the cost-effective and abundant sulfur technology. Acquiring Northvolt's plant is a component of their strategy, which includes a $1 billion factory near Reno, Nevada. This Nevada plant is anticipated to begin production in 2027. Let's stay with batteries and CATL. And the Chinese company CATL is considering establishing a facility in the US if trade barriers affecting EVs are reduced, according to the founder, Robin Zeng. The US market is challenging for any of the Chinese EV makers or battery makers due to various trade restrictions that have the backing of both major political parties. These barriers initiated during the first Trump era and widened during the Biden era have kept the Chinese effectively blocked out of the US. A proposed Republican bill may further limit incentives for EVs that use Chinese battery technologies. Despite these hurdles, though, companies like CATL saying that they would happily contribute to the US EV transition and provide US jobs on US soil if they were allowed into the market. Well, here's a story that I've been talking a little bit more about. So it's fascinating to see when I pick up on a topic whether I notice it more because I'm now more interested or whether I'm just picking up a little bit earlier than some of the other headlines. You know, you buy a new car and then you see lots of that color car or that make car. I don't know which one it is, but I've been talking a lot about Morocco recently. The last maybe 18 months or so, how I see Morocco being as one of those almost politically agnostic places with very cheap labour that could play a big part in the EV transition. Well, now, today, another article comes my way that points out that the UK government issued a report today saying that by 2030, Morocco is poised to become a major exporter of EV batteries to Europe and the US, part of the Manufacturing Africa programme. This new government report from the UK forecasts Morocco could produce and export LFP packs at $68 per kilowatt hour, earning $10 to $15 billion annually and making 25,000 jobs by the end of the decade, placing Morocco among the top global players in battery manufacturing like China, Indonesia, and Europe. Foreign Secretary David Lammy presented this report, highlighting Morocco's favorable conditions to make EV batteries. These include an expanding automotive sector, access to raw materials, lithium, cobalt, phosphorus and copper. Morocco set to host Africa's first gigafactory with cathode production capabilities. And Morocco's free trade agreement with the United States and its geographical proximity to Europe increases its attractiveness for foreign investment in the EV battery industry. By the end of the decade, Morocco will be the only African nation producing cathode materials essential for battery manufacturing. The report cites Morocco's stable political economy, geographical proximity, duty-free exports to the EU and the US, and raw material reserves as the key factors in why it'll be an appealing place to make EV batteries. All right, how should we charge our cars? Well, a new study coming out today from the University of Calgary suggests that many EV owners will find slower home chargers more than sufficient. 240-volt level 2 charging is considered necessary at home. But research saying that 120-volt level 1 charging, which uses a standard outlet, could meet many people's needs. Now, Blake Schaefer is an associate professor of economics at the university, noting that level 2 chargers are faster. In contrast, level 1 chargers are more accessible and less stress-inducing on the electricity grid. Collaboration with NMAX, they examined 129 EVs in Calgary over the course of a year and found that 30% of them would happily rely on a level 1 charger, and 53% needed a public fast charger only once a month or less. Now, talk about charging your EV. What about overnight? It's what I do with Octopus on Octopus Intelligent Go 7P overnight. It's regardless of whether I plug the EV in, I get it from 11:30 to 5:30 a.m. If I plug my EV in maybe at 8 or 9 p.m. before bedtime, often it'll turn the whole house cheaper earlier if the grid is clean and green and it's cheap enough for Octopus to do it, because they're clever like that and they do lots of funky things with real-time trading. And so I get lots of 7p electricity. And if you'd like to join me on Octopus, by the way, and you're thinking of moving, I'll pop the referral code in the top of the show notes. It's for my friends and family. And so as a friend of the podcast, you're more than welcome to use that. You get 50 quid. When you join Octopus, and I get the same as well, which helps me, it helps you, and you're more than welcome to use that if you want to. Now, in the US, General Motors and Reliant Energy are offering free nighttime charging to some Chevy EV owners in Texas. By joining Reliant's EV charging plan, customers can earn bill credits for charging between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. Participants must choose an EV through GM's smart charging portal. GM Energy is GM's home energy division. Reliant is part of NRG Energy, and they claim that the energy for their overnight free charging for those 7 hours is all renewables. But watch out for things like renewable energy certificates, RECs. These are the things that allow many firms, not just these two that I'm talking about, to say, hey, it's 100% renewable energy, even if the actual source is a fossil fuel. If you look at these certificates, many exaggerate the environmental benefits because you can effectively pay to say that you are renewable. Check where it's coming from, but otherwise, free overnight charging in Texas, bring it on. And finally, something that's happened here over the last 2 years is predicted to happen to America next. Now, we're never ahead. I always had to wait longer to see Indiana Jones and Back to the Future when I was growing up in the 1980s. We always got stuff second after the United States. But no, we do get some stuff first, and that is cheaper EVs. I'm glad things have changed in the last 30 or 40 years. The US EV market is poised to repeat what's happened to the UK. Now, we don't really have any, domestic consumer EV incentives anymore. But we have a load of fleet incentives in this country. And so what happens is EVs over here, at least, are predominantly, even if you get your company car through your workplace, done through fleet purchases. That's where the incentives are. And so they are typically 2, 3, 4, normally 3 year finance agreements. And if it's a lease hire to a business, they all come off lease and they all go into the auction, and the value of those vehicles is what the lease companies get back. Now, many of those companies have been hit really hard by EV depreciation. Didn't see it coming. Nothing you can do about it. The market changed rapidly. And the same thing is going to happen in the US. Over the coming year, it's poised for a major change as the Inflation Reduction Act kicks in, the so-called lease loophole. So even those vehicles that don't get the $7,500 federal tax credit, you can still lease them, at least for now. And the automaker themselves gets to pocket the $7,500 and, in theory, pass it on to you. And they normally, I think, it looks like they do. And there's no way of telling it, but it just works its way through in cheaper leasing. They're all starting to come to an end now. Over the next year or two, there's going to be an influx of off-lease vehicles coming to the US. By the close of 2026, over 250,000 EV leases will expire, boosting the supply of affordable used EVs. You know, long-time listeners, you know I'm all the juice for me is in the used market. Like the new market, it's very interesting. Of course it is. I love thinking about used cars, used EVs, because it's how most people do buy their cars at the end of the day. And it's never talked about. It's not as sexy as the new car share, which is, you know, 20, 30, 40, 95% in Norway. But the used cars is where average, everyday, hardworking people like myself and probably yourself as well tend to look for cars. Now, that is going to, in the US over the next year or two, have a significant impact on the price that you'll be able to buy very good, nearly new, off-lease vehicles for. Currently, EV lessees pay an average of $584 a month. Wow, that's a lot of money, isn't it? every month. On the average EV lease price, vehicles have a residual value on average of $29,500. Buying out a lease costs on average $477 per month. So we'll see what happens there. That's your podcast for today. Thanks for listening. As always, couldn't do this without you. Know the Patreon supporters are the legends that get this show on the air every single day. You can join the list of legends, be an executive producer or above. Get your name in the Hall of Fame. I'd love to see you on that. If you want to, have a look at patreon.com, patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. And you get your podcasts first. Thank you very much to our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, and Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel, and Octopus Electric Vehicles. Global public charging made simple with one app and one map. Have a good one. I'll see you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.